Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio with John Kurska, a friend of mine who's a passionate angler, a passionate winemaker, and John, I don't know which is more passionate.
Well, I got three kids, so I'm pretty passionate all the way around.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, we also have the Grizz on the line with us from our other studio down in La Paz, Baja California, sir. So we've got the West Coast pretty much covered, but what we're going to do is something a little bit more interesting than we normally do. We're going to go all the way over to Maine, and we have Raymond Young from Young's Lobster Pound, and we're going to find out everything there is to know about Maine lobster. Raymond.
Yes, how are you doing tonight?
Well, it is fantastic. But what we'd like to do, now just a bit of a quick background, is that my understanding is that, actually, I met Ray on our last trip down to Cabo San Lucas. We talked on the airplane, and I was fascinated. I go, man, we want to hear about this. Raymond's grandfather was a lobster fisherman in Maine. His father was a lobster fisherman in Maine. So what else is Ray going to do?
Well, Raymond was a lobster fisherman also, so we grew up in the business, learning the ropes, how to build your own traps, how to make your own netting and heads for the traps, bait bags, all the above. We had to learn the old way, and then we learned the ways of fishing from my grandfather and father. I mean, we went by point of land, by where the hard bottom was to catch lobsters in certain times of the year, and in the deep water where they was in the spring and in the fall. So
I just realized what you're talking about is with the electronics that we have now, you forget about, you guys had to use landmarks, and I would imagine that the weather wasn't always such that you could do that.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, if we had a compass on the boat, that was about the best you could go by, and sometimes to find different points of bottom. I mean, we used to use a piece of string and a weight to go down, bang a rock,
yeah.
But we had fathom meters and stuff. But
wow.
Still, the technology today, even still, with all your fish finds and stuff, it will not pick up your lobsters. So
yeah.
That's the only thing that's really keeping the main industry going because, like the purse seiners and everything else, they can take a plane and fly over and see fish, and they can scoop them all up, or if they're dragging for bottom fish, they drag up all the fish off the bottom. But lobsters are still a harder object to try to figure them out where they're going to be the next day or next week. So it's still the technology isn't quite there. You have to find them completely yet.
Hey, Raymond, got a quick question for you. Do the lobsters actually migrate, or do they spend their life in a pretty small area?
Lobsters will travel within, 30, 40-mile distance radius. In the winter months and the colder temperatures, they'll go out and stay out in the deep water. And if it gets down to a certain degree, we've had divers go down. They found them buried in the mud, just their eyes sticking out a little bit. And after that, water temperature warms up 1 or 2 degrees, and they come out and they start to feed. Even though they're taking in plankton all the time as they take in salt water and breathe through, they're feeding on plankton. But when they get to that point where it's a couple degrees warmer, then they'll crawl out and start to feed. As the water temperature gets warmer in the spring, they start to move inland towards the rockier bottom where they need to find a place to shed their shells in the rocks for cover to keep away from the seals and other predators that are after them. So when they get in those places, they'll come in as shallow as 5-6 feet of water.
Raymond, on the West Coast, we do have a lobster fishery, but it's a completely different animal, and of course it tastes completely different, as the Grizz will attest to. But now there is sport fishing in Maine, but you have to use it the same way. You just put layout traps.
Only way that you can catch lobsters is in a conventional lobster trap. That's the only way. You can't dive for them. You can't fish for them on a pole. It's illegal to do all that, so it always has to be caught by trap only. If you was to come up and you was a resident, you can get a recreational trap license, which is 5 traps per person. You can set those out and catch lobsters as long as you go by the legal size limits of the small ones and the big ones and the females and the eggs and all that stuff.
Is there a slot limit then? You say you can't catch the big ones?
Yes, on our big ones, we have on the body shell of the lobster, from the eye socket to the back of the body shell where the tail starts, it's 3 1/4 inches on a small one. Anything under that, we throw back for till they get to size, which is about a pound, pound and a quarter. And on our big ones, it's 5 inches on the body shell, which the biggest lobster I've seen, a big male, might go 5 1/4 pounds. But so anything over that, we throw back for breeding stock. Any lobster, any female that has eggs underneath the tail, we will take and make a V-notch in the next to the last right-hand flipper and throw that lobster back. They may catch that lobster next year with no eggs on it, but that flipper with that mark in it means she's a breeding stock lobster, and they have to throw that back.
Interesting.
So that's what keeps our main industry going on the lobsters, because we've had these rules and laws set for so long that a lot of the fishermen, you know, they, like today I had boats come in and said, you know, this time of the year they start, the lobsters start to slow down a little bit, but they start catching a lot of these females with V-notch tails and, you know, or egg lobsters, and they said it's nothing to catch 8 or 10 to a trap sometimes. So as long as we know those lobsters are still there and producing 5 to 6,000 eggs on every other year that they would carry, that's keeping our industry going.
Well, that's just good good herd management then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, Maine has had some good rules and regulations. I mean, cut back to our fishermen, so a fisherman only can have 800 traps per person now. There's no new license issued unless you've been on board, worked so many hours as a stern man to get an apprenticeship license, and then you might be able to get 150 traps.
Well,
after
Raymond, let's get into some of the good stuff. Now, Grizz is joining us from La Paz. They have lobster in La Paz, but it's not the main lobster. It's, you know, it's I'm not sure if it's spiny or Pacific lobster, but all that you have is the tails. And of course, in California, you know, we have spiny lobster, and again, it's just the tails. But you know, I think Grizz has some questions for you about main lobster.
Questions, I don't. The thing about the Maine lobster, to me, is the only lobster that exists. What we have down here, the meat is tough. It doesn't have good taste. It's just not a lobster for me. Now, when you talk about Maine, to me, the Maine lobster with those giant claws, actually breaking those claws, eating the meat out of those claws, and that tail is sweet, it's tender, and it's wonderful. I guess it's from the cold water. I really don't know. It's another species I know, but you guys got the best in the world.
Yeah, it really is. It is our cold water lobster is just amazing, fire the taste, the sweetness, the tenderness, it's all there. But you can take a lobster and undercook it, and it can be tough and chewy. There is a little more precise far as cooking time. We have a hard shell lobster and a soft shell lobster. Right now we're into the soft shell season lobsters, where they've molted their shell to a bigger size, and those lobsters there will have about 20% water in them, where they've molted that shell to that bigger size, so water takes the place of that meat. So they are a little sweet, a little juicier, but sometimes a little disappointing when you open the claw up and only half it's there.
Okay. Raymond, before we lose you, because we're getting close on time, let's get some contact information. I think your Facebook is probably the best place to reach you.
Yep, you can go on, look at Young's Lobster Pound on Facebook in Belfast, Maine, where we are, and look us up. And somebody wants something shipped to the house, we can send it FedEx overnight air right to your house. And or to your restaurant, whatever you'd like. We carry around 30,000 pounds of lobsters inside of a building that holds tanks three tier high, okay. The whole length.
Wow. So that's Young's Lobster Pound on Facebook?
Yep.
Perfect. We're going to get you on again. This was a lot of fun. Grizz, hang on. We're going to be back with everybody in just a couple of minutes, so don't go very far.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Set on the magnificent Sea of Cortez, the Grand Heritage Resort and Spa at Marina Costa Baja is the first five-star resort in La Paz, Baja South. Overlooking a 250-slip marina and white sand beaches, enjoy two signature restaurants, a world-class destination for fishing or diving. Enjoy five-star elegance in the charming laid-back city of La Paz. Dock your boat and enjoy the Marina Village. Visit on the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
You can fish from a boat, or you can stand on shore, or you can use a pontoon with carpet on the floor. You can sit upon a dock or wade out to a big old rock on fishing, fishing, fishing.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio. We have John Kurska visiting with us today. And in La Paz, we have the Grizz from Adventures South of the Border. Hey, Grizz, we're going to have to work something out on those Maine lobster, aren't we?
Yeah, I love them, John. To tell you the truth, down here, you know, they have they call them lobsters, but I'd rather have a little shrimp than I would one of those. I just don't really like them down here.
No, they're not bad, but they're nothing like the sweet meat of the Maine lobster. So.
Oh, no, that's the best in the world. Well, once you try one, you'll never go back.
You know what else is really good is Alaskan king crab.
Oh, that's my second.
Yeah.
I love that, too, but we don't get any of that down here.
Grizz, you'll eat anything from what I heard.
Well, don't believe everything you hear.
Yeah.
It's basically tree. I had worms the other day.
Oh.
Yeah, I did. I had what they call them, worms from Margay. Yeah. I was in a restaurant in Cabo that specializes in ant eggs and grub worms, and they fried them all. I ate them with David Jones. He wouldn't eat them. His wife wouldn't eat them, but I did.
You went to La Fonda, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I've been to La Fonda.
Right.
Absolutely. You can get the mealworms and the traditional Aztec insect cuisine. Been there, done that, Grizz.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It's a wonderful place.
But no crabs or no Maine lobster.
Okay.
I'll tell you. I had the mealworms, too, with the little black bugs, and they were quite tasty.
I don't know. I think I completely lost control.
Yeah, well, unless you eat there, you can't get in this conversation, John.
Okay. Well, let's change this conversation. The segue from Alaska king crabs, I wanted to talk to Michael Briggs, who's up at Clover Pass right now in Ketchikan, Alaska. And what we want to do is, you know, maybe do a quick recap of last year. But, Grizz, I don't know if I've told you yet, but Michael and I are talking about maybe trying to get you up to Ketchikan this coming year and doing some filming.
I'll be more than happy to.
Well, you know, the divers that you put in the water down in Mexico, they may not be too happy to jump in the water and catch a kid.
They had to bring their long johns, John.
Hey, Michael, sorry about all that, but why don't you join in with us?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Oh, it's just doing fantastic.
But, how's the weather down there?
Well, probably a little warmer than it is up there. I know Clover Pass is what they call, I guess, the Riviera of Alaska. But it can get a little cool and windy sometimes.
Yeah, actually, the winds last night were blowing pretty hard. It was, I think, 70 knots at times, measured at the airport there.
Well, in other parts of the world, that would be a hurricane. But anyway, we don't usually go up there this late in the year, the end of October. We like to go up in May, June, July, August, and September. We're looking at putting a trip together right now in the beginning of September of next year. So why don't you do me a favor and kind of go over the different seasons that you have up there?
Well, you know, the fishing season really begins right around Memorial Day weekend. That's about when the first kings start showing up. And the kings are available basically all summer long, but peak kind of from then until about 4th of July. And about that time, the pinks and chums start showing up, an early run of silvers as well. And that lasts all the way through July and August, and then a really thick silver run begins around the 1st of September and lasts until about October 1st.
Well, I've been up there in July in September and the end of September. And yeah, those silvers are incredible. But right now, you know, things are kind of picking up over they have been the last couple of years. And it's not a bad idea for people that are interested, you know, to get in touch with you. But other than Ketchikan, give us some other ideas on areas around there and, you know, what it's like fishing in your part of Alaska.
Well, I mean, you know, the fishing is pretty similar all through southeast Alaska, through the panhandle there. Up near Sitka, one of the differences is that you're actually kind of on the outside of the Inside Passage, so you're exposed to the open ocean, whereas we're really protected here by some of the larger islands that are on the outside of us. Mm-hmm. So it makes our area a little bit more like lake fishing, and Sitka maybe a little bit more like deep sea fishing in a way. And then, of course, Juneau is sucked in like we are as well, but they're up there near the glacier there. But all the fishing's pretty similar. I mean, they've got runs of salmon. All the species of Pacific salmon come running through, and, of course, the halibut fishing's great all summer long as well.
And of course, part of the reason that Ketchikan is what a great place, and John's been there, is that you know, you're talking about the archipelago. It's on the outside. It can be blowing heavy on the outside. And then right in front of Clover Pass, where Clover Pass Resort is, it's, you know, you sometimes think you're in an alpine lake.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times it is a lot like lake fishing, although we did have a few days that were pretty blustery this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, if Grizz comes up this next year, Grizz, why don't you ask a couple of questions on, because I don't think you've been up there.
No, I haven't. I fished Alaska a lot. I spent a lot of time in Nunavak. I love fishing up there, the char and stuff. But, yeah, I'd like to come up and fish. I'd like to take a fly rod. Can I do that?
You can do that as well. I mean, we have hundreds of elevated lakes all around the Ketchikan area where some of them, in fact, like if you were fishing it today, you may be the only person fishing it all summer long. It could be a year or more before it's fished again. So it's really pristine when it comes to going out and finding your own piece of area to fish by yourself.
Well, Grizz, I think in answer to your question, on the saltwater, you wouldn't be real successful, although it's possible. But if you wanted to read it on some incredible fishing, and they have fly-in trips out of Ketchikan, where you can, what the kind of the rule is you take off in a float plane and you fly this, you know, it's not that far to this beautiful, pristine lake. And if you see another float plane on the lake, you don't stop. You go to the next one.
Yeah, that's the way it was up in Nunavak. You know, I used to fly in on float planes. Mm-hmm. I really like it a lot. Well, let's see what we can't do up there, John. We'll do some trolling around or however you do, and then we'll see if we can't catch some on a fly.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, now these, what Michael didn't mention is that we're talking about Clover Pass, but the resort, actually, there's three resorts up there, and those are?
Well, Cedars Lodge is in downtown Ketchikan. It is primarily for guided fishing. If you were going to come up and you wanted to hire a skipper to take you out on the water, that would probably be your best bet. And then Clover Pass Resort is kind of best of all worlds. You can really customize your trip, maybe have a day or two of guided fishing, and then go out on your own in a skiff, a 20-foot skiff or a 14-foot skiff, and run around and fish on your own there. And then Silver King Lodge, which is on an island about 20 miles north east of Ketchikan, is primarily for self-guided fishing. It's for people who've been up here a few times, and they come in and stay for a week and just burn around on little skiffs around the resort.
And that's those are the people that just want to go fishing all day, every day.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Michael, you've been very informative, and we're definitely going to see you next week. We're going to put a trip together no matter what, the beginning of November. So if anybody wants to get involved in that, they should go to fishtalkradio.com. Just send me an email. We haven't posted our trips for next year yet, but send me an email. And it's john@fishtalkradio.com, and we'll fix you up. Michael, thanks for your help.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Take a peek at the lodges. Go to ketchikanalaskafishing.com.
CatchCanAlaskaFishing.com. Perfect.
All right, thank you, guys.
Okay, now what we're now, Randy has been very patiently waiting on the line with us. He's down in California at one of our favorite lakes in Central California. We got Lakes Nacimiento and San Antonio. And Randy, I know that you got a lot going on there, so give us an idea what you got going and what's coming up.
Well, we got a lot going on. First of all, it's about 82 degrees today, and it's beautiful here and pretty quiet. Coming up on October 5th and 6th, we got One Bass doing their Tournament of Champions.
November, you mean.
November, and they invited 170 boats. They're going to give away two Nitro Bass boats, so kind of a cool event for us. So we're thrilled to be taking part in that. We are getting ready to do a lot of our winter maintenance, and we're going to be installing some new units, replacing some of the modular units at Lake San Antonio with new units, five of them to be exact, which is real exciting. Going to do some renovations on our lodges here. Monterey County is going to be doing some renovations in the campground, so we're real excited about getting things spruced up a little bit for the oncoming season.
Now, you are open year-round, though.
Yes, we are. We are open year-round. We're also, you know, running a new winter rate. We really slashed our room prices. We're down at 119 for rooms here in our lodges at Nacimiento, and starting at 99 at Lake San Antonio.
And so how many people can you put in one of those?
You know, I've got rooms you can put up to 12 people in, actually.
Okay, it sounds like a party.
Well, $9 a piece.
Yeah, you got a big group, it's a bargain. And like I say, the lodges at Nacimiento, they all have a beautiful view of the lake out the backside of the lodge. They have decks. You know, really nice lodges, just spectacular views.
Hey, Randy, real quick, I heard that the stripers really took off this year up at San Antonio.
They did. You know, we've had so many spawns now, it's just awesome. You know, the little stripers are so voracious anyway, but they're still seeing striper actions at San Antonio around the old ramp there at North Shore and off the chalk cliffs. You know, they're trolling for them with spoons. They're hitting them with castmasters. They seem to like anything shiny out there right now. So it's pretty neat. We haven't had this long of a run on stripers in a while, so we're real excited. And we've got them catching a lot of them. I took some pictures of some guys about a week ago that all had, you know, they were all 7 to 9 pound stripers.
Randy, we're getting up against the clock. Give us some contact information.
Sure. Obviously, you can get us at our websites, lakesanantonioresort.com or lakenacimientoresort.com. Phone numbers, San
Just
Antonio.
No, go ahead. The website again is Lakes Nacimiento.
LakeNacimientoResort.com.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to go. We appreciate you coming in. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. Thanks, Randy.
Considered the finest long-range sport fishing vessel in the world, the Royal Polaris is based at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Fishing the Royal Polaris provides unmatched service, speed, and comfort. Live the dream of landing giant yellowfin tuna, wahoo, and summer albacore. Still the fastest long-range sport fisher in the world at 113 feet, the Royal Polaris offers first-class staterooms, refrigerated fish storage, the latest in electronic fish-finding gear, and unmatched expertise. Live your dream for less money than expected. Visit RoyalPolaris.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
There's nothing like a morning bite when the fish are eating well, or a new crankbait that's running straight over a rocky ledge or tree that fell. A new shiny boat that I can tow to every lake that I can find. So when the weekend comes and the work gets done, I got one thing on my mind.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio, and we're having a party. We got John Hennigan and John Kurska in the studio in California, and then in the other studio in La Paz, we have the Grizz from Adventures South of the Border, and a little bit farther south, down in the Puerto Priso Shopping Mall in the marina, beautiful Cabo San Lucas at Picante Sport Fishing, is we have the Wolf. And what an exciting time of the year is, Wolf.
It is good. Fishing's been great. Weather's like it always is in Cabo. It's beautiful. It's in the low 90s. It's cooling down around 70 at night. Fishing's been good for, especially in the Pacific side now, for Dorado, Marlin. Had some tuna coming in today, and it just keeps getting better.
Well, I will have to make a quick comment. The Grizz and I went out just a very short time ago on the Salsa, 35-foot Cabo Express, and if anybody was paying attention last week, they heard the story about the 240-pound yellowfin tuna on 50-pound test line, that those guys could not have done it without that boat. You don't get a fish that big on 50-pound test. When it hangs for 4.5 hours, a lot of things can go wrong, and they did a great job. Yeah, the other thing I'd like to mention, talking about the Picante fleet, is on the offshore, one of your boats placed in that?
Yeah, we did real good. Real proud of our Picante 45. They placed first in the most release fish category, and because of the way the things were in the offshore, there weren't that many big marlin brought to scale. They ended up placing third in the overall, and then they also tied for first in points, but they got second in the Baby Bisbee offshore. And then one of our charter yachts, the Pegasus, placed third in the Big Bisbee.
When there was only four fish brought in, and of course one of them, the placement was and that was the Pegasus. So, you know, what does that tell you about the Picante Sport Fishing fleet, Grizz?
Well, that's who I fish with. I mean, you know, that's where I go, and I fish with them. There's not a better company out there right now than they are. And Mike is very knowledgeable, and he's a biologist, and he's a nice guy if you like him. But it's a good fleet, the best there is.
Well, I tell you what, if you're going to spend the time and the money to go to Cabo San Lucas, to spend a couple of $100 more than, you know, getting a boat off the dock and get a world-class tournament boat with thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment and a very experienced crew, and it's fast. We left, when we were down there, we left the marina right at 7 o'clock. We went around the Pacific about 22, 23 miles up to the Golden Gate banks, and we left at 7. By 8 o'clock, we already had a striper on the boat. Not hooked up, but on the boat. And by the time
we released him, though, make sure you say that.
Well, of course. Well, we brought it to the boat, took some pictures, and said thank you very much. And about that time, we were releasing that fish. The other boats that left before we did were just showing up.
Yeah, they're fast boats. And you know, even if you don't want to go fishing down there, the character of Mike, you should go into the Picantes just to know this Mike Wolf guy, just to see him and talk to him. He's well worth just the visit to see him. And the other thing about Picante, in the office, they've got almost a collection, looks like a museum, of all these mounted fish, replicas. So it's worth stopping in and see him. It's worth shaking the hands of Mike the Wolf and tell him I sent you just to mess with him.
Grizz, John Kurska is sitting here next to me, and he's pointing to his shirt. He got that at Picante office.
Yeah, I had to go in there.
He wears one of those things?
No, no, this is one of the nice dress shirts, one of the Guy Harvey's there. I had to go in and say hi to Antonio there and pick up a nice shirt last time I was in.
Oh, okay. Guy Harvey's a pretty good friend of mine. In fact, I'm wearing his shirt right now, too. But I didn't get it to Picante.
Yeah. But, you know, the other thing is, Grizz, after you tell him to come visit me, they had to make sure they watch your TV show to see the live action.
Yeah, you and I make quite a team, don't we? And with John,
yeah.
I mean, if you want to see the Three Stooges, watch that show.
Well, Mike, I got to tell you, I make it down there quite frequently, and I always, you know, live right there, as you know, by the harbor. But I'm always amazed sometimes that the more than less, the Picante fleet seems to have more flags hanging on their boats when they come back in, and that means a lot to me. I like to look at these boats, and man, those little boats got flags on them like crazy. And that,
yeah, but you know they lie.
No, I know when they come
in. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I know when they come in, they're hanging true colors.
Hey, I'm sorry, but Mike and Grizz, we have someone else that's on the line that'd like to join in with us, if you don't mind. We have David Jones at up in La Paz at Fisherman's Fleet. He's been listening to us and probably laughing, and he may have to want to join in and see if we can get an idea what else is going on down in Baja.
Well, you couldn't ask for a better man to join. David Jones has got the best fleet up here, the only fleet that is worth even talking about here in La Paz. In fact, I'm going out with him tomorrow. They're great. David, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, Larry, Curly, I'm fine.
I knew that one was coming.
Well, we know who Curly is. That's why he wears a hat.
Mike, how come, what's, is Guy Harvey naked?
Because he doesn't have any shirts left?
Well, Mike's got his shirt on, so I wonder what the hell he's wearing.
Oh, David.
This is a fishing show, isn't it? Let's talk about fishing.
I don't know. I think I lost control again.
Too.
What's happening? How'd you guys do today?
Better. The wind was down a little bit. We're getting intermittent bursts of north wind. This was only a couple of days, but it's, you know, the air temperatures are coming down a little bit, which means that all the fish that are north of us up in Laredo and up that way have got to come back faster, so we'll get another crack at them on the way out. There's quite a few marlin around, most of them striped still. We still got sailfish, which I cannot explain. That's usually a May-June fish for us, but they must have lost their calendars or something. And tuna bite continues. You know, it's almost like looking at trees in Oregon. We've had tuna pretty much through the year. It's a great thing. I don't mean to treat it casually. It's just we've seen a hell of a lot of tuna this year.
Yeah, it's been good. Well, that lady got that 202 pound with you and won the tournament when I was there. And well, basically the thing of it is, David, your guys are the best. You know, how many people can you handle at once right now?
Oh, no more than you and John, I don't think.
No, I'm talking about fishermen.
Oh, I got it. Okay, well, we've had, I think our record is 44 boats in a day.
Yeah, can you imagine that? And I have fished not with 44 of them, but with almost all of them, and every one of his captains are the greatest. They're fantastic. They know what they do. They work hard, and that's the only, like I said, it's the only group worth fishing with, the only fleet in La Paz. But David, you got something else really exciting going on, starting next month. Why don't you tell us about the big surprise that you're started up?
Well, actually, it's next week, which is next month. We'll be heading up to Mag Bay and setting up our remote camp there. Next week, starting fishing the 5th, and we've got 7 weeks of fishing booked up there with people. We're moving a cruiser up there, and we're going to take advantage of the winter offshore fishery outside of Mag Bay and maybe give a few yellowtail at the mouth there when we get enough marlin and enough wahoo. But we're really excited about it. We love going up there, and Christopher's going up in deckhand, and we got a local guy up there captaining for us, and it should be a lot of fun. We didn't go last year. The 2 years before we went up, we had a blast, and this year we just decided we had to put it back together again and called up a lot of the guys that had been before, and they all said, boy, howdy, yes, and we're going to go up there and eat scallops and lobster and live the tough life.
Okay. Well, is those Maine lobster?
No, mainly they're Mexican lobsters.
Okay. Anyway, you know, you talked about Mag Bay, which is actually Magdalena Bay, which is very famous for a lot of different reasons. Do you want to kind of go over that real quick?
Yeah, it's about 3.5 hours north here by car. If you look on the map, it's 2/3 of the way down the peninsula. On the Pacific side, it's a large round bay. It's part of the estuary that the humpback and gray whales spawn in, so a lot of people go down there in the winter and go whale watching. It's very popular for that. It's also a spectacular place for aquatic bird watching. There are some geese that come down from saltwater geese that come down from Alaska. There's a lot of wading birds there. It's also the best winter marlin fishery in the world, striped marlin only, but lots and lots of them. And also, I think the world record on yellowfin tuna was set there by the long-range fleet just offshore last year. So
that's right, 403 pounds, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, it's a remote place. It's hard to get to, which means that a lot of people haven't been there yet, and that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, that is. And there, from what I understand, there's virtually no facilities there. So you guys are pretty much setting up your own camp and cabin, and, you know, you have a boat available. And yeah, otherwise, it's very difficult to, you know, to do. And you fly into La Paz. Is that what you do?
Yeah, fly into La Paz and then drive up the next morning and then get on a boat and go out to the island and live out there. So we're, you know, 10 minutes from the mouth of the bay and ready to go. And it's a high level of camping, basically. But we've got a house with showers and a television set and stuff. So it's kind of Mike Grizz camping.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
But that's not the kind of camping I do anymore.
Well, we're running out of time in this Baja segment, but it's been incredible. Wolf Picante Fleet, I'm going to be coming back down there hopefully real soon and fishing with you guys again. And then David Jones, we're going to get together with you. And, you know, don't catch them all before I get there.
John, don't forget that this next week is the Losa, the Cabo Tuna Jack.
Oh, yeah, the Deep Western Outdoor News. That's a huge one. So we're going to be giving you updates on that.
And, I'm fishing that, John.
Okay, well, and we've got 20 seconds, so we need to talk about Fisherman's Fleet. The website is?
www.fishermansfleet.com. I believe that links from yours, does it not?
There you go. There you go. Fishtalkradio.com. And also the Picante Fleet. And then, of course, we got the Grizz on asobonline.com. But we're going to have to take a break right now, but we're going to be back with you guys, of course, real soon. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan, John Kurska, David Jones.